Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the penultimate of May, Anno Domini 2015. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose. Nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. I hope people are checking our website to see where our problem is. But of course, like I said, announcing it on the air is not going to do anybody any good because they can't hear it. All right, to the phones, to the news. We'll go with the news first. Big deal. One transmitter goes down and suddenly I can't talk. All right, Google I.O. happened this week. That's their big developers conference where all the latest and greatest are on display. We haven't got a new hardware, he hinted to Google, but Google made it up for us with a ton of software and platform news. The announcements came fast. We only have a two-hour show, so I'll just mention the major announcements and talk a little bit about a couple of them. As expected, Google launched the M preview version of Android with a consumer release scheduled for quarter three. Main features? Chrome custom tabs, granular permissions, DOES mode, US Type-C support, fingerprint sensor support, which some Android models have had for a very long time. Now it's baked into the operating system. Android Pay, App State Backup, which lets you back up your App State to Google Drive, which means if your phone crashes or you buy a new phone, the state of your app remains. It's very nice. And Android M developer preview images for the Nexus 5, 6, 9, and Player. Also announced, Project Brillo, an Internet of Things operating system. A new inbox for Gmail, Google Photos, and Google Now on Tap. Developers got Android Studio 1.3, Polymer 1.0, a new material design library, more tools. There's offline Google Maps, Android One updates, Android Nano Degree, where you can get a certificate in Android development. Google Family Star, which for developers means that they can put all their apps under the Family Star, which means they're family-friendly, and families can more easily find all the family-friendly apps. Developer Pages, virtual reality with a great new version of Cardboard, and HBO Now. Yeah, that's a lot of stuff, and that's not even all of it. Basically, Google is stepping up. Traditionally, they have put stuff out there and left it to other people to tout it and figure out what to do with it. But having seen both Apple and Microsoft claim to invent things that have been in the Android OS for a long time, they're finally stepping up. I hope they continue. One of the biggest announcements is that the Google Photo is now a full-fledged, separate product as opposed to simply a part of Google+. It's still linked into Google+, but it's a separate product. More important, however, is the fact that Google Photo now offers improved auto tagging, revamped Auto Awesome features, and best of all, unlimited free storage of your photos. That's right, unlimited free storage. Photos will, however, have a 16-megapixel cap per image. Oh. And videos can only be uploaded if they're 1080p or lower. Google Photos can recognize and categorize your photos for you automatically. It will not only be able to identify individual faces, but it can also group together everyday objects like food, landscapes, buildings, and basically any other category you can think of. Google Now on Tap is another interesting feature, and it's an update to Google Search integration on Android M, which brings contextual information to your fingertips when you need it. The core feature of Now on Tap is delivering information no matter what you're doing, so you no longer have to exit what you're doing, such as listening to music or texting your friends, to find a quick piece of misinformation. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google I.O. And your choices are amazing stuff, interesting, does it run on my original iPhone, and meh. And so far, interesting is ahead, followed by meh. followed by Amazing Stuff, and nobody cares if it runs on their original iPhone. So once you've done that, I know you'll have more to say. So check out our forum. If you go down on the right, you will see, under Fascinating Stuff, you will see the forums. The second forum is the poll discussion, and the first item under the poll discussion is 30 May 15, Google I.O. So far, nobody's posted there yet because it probably hasn't been up quite long enough, but there's a link to a fairly full explanation of most of the highlights of what was announced. It was a three-day conference, so I'm not going to be able to give you everything that was announced, but there's some pretty interesting stuff there.
Did you say Google on tap?
Yeah.
Does that mean it's going to show you where all the beer is?
Yes, it will. If you ask it, find me the nearest brew house.
Nice. Now, so, if it can make beer come out of your phone, that would be cool.
What?
If it can make beer come out of your phone, that would be cool.
That's next. There's an app for that, and there's an add-on for that. So you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Yeah, it was quite a series of announcements.
And since there's no hardware, you know, the big thing with Google I.O. is all the free stuff Google gives you.
Yeah.
So everyone tears their chair apart because it's hidden under their chair. But since there wasn't anything this time, you know, everyone was mad.
Yeah, there was.
Oh, yeah?
Google announced a new version of Cardboard, which I'm going to have to buy now. Cardboard is their I.O., is their virtual reality.
I did read that it works with the iPhone now.
And it works with the iPhone. And everybody got a Cardboard, which is about $20, so no big deal. And they also got a phone to put in it.
Oh.
Yeah.
But not a new super phone.
Oh, yes.
They usually announce. Really?
Yeah. Google was not about to skimp on this one.
Cool.
No. No. They got a Nexus, I think, 7. A Nexus,
7 now?
Whatever the
Nexus
latest.
Nexus 6.
Yeah, whatever the latest. Yeah, 6. I think so. Whatever the number is.
Whatever.
I don't have one, so I don't know.
Yeah, me neither.
9.
Nine. Yeah. Yeah, or the 9. No, the 9 is a tablet. The 6 is the phone. The 7, I think, is also a tablet. Anyway, the point is that there was a lot of stuff. The other cool thing, which they did not give away, is they're now working with GoPro. GoPro and Google have created a 16-camera circular rig that will take video. You can take video as you walk around with this 16 gig, probably on your hat or holding it over your head or whatever you want to do. And then you upload it to Google's website where they will seamlessly
put it all together,
stitch all the pieces together and turn it into 3D.
Wait a minute, no.
And VR.
So you have a 3D virtual reality walkthrough of any site you want to map.
What's the charge for that?
I don't know what the charge is.
Jumping back though for a minute.
You mean the cost of the thing or the charge?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But stepping back one a little bit further though, explain the Cardboard a little bit more.
Oh yeah, Cardboard is, you should look it up, Google Cardboard. And
I can't right now.
You're right, you can't. What it actually is a little cardboard, and it's actually the first ones were made out of cardboard.
Okay.
You can now get them out of metal or out of whatever. And you fold it up. It comes with a couple of lenses and a couple of rubber bands and a couple of magnets and a couple of buttons. You fold this thing up like a little origami thing, stick your phone in it, and it's a VR rig. You hold it up in front of your face, and you're doing virtual reality. Out of this little $20 cardboard thing, you can spend $40 if you want it out of like plastic or whatever.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's $20. Now, there's a new version out. The old version did not work with a couple of phones.
Okay.
The new version works with everything, including iPhones.
Sweet.
So the new version should be out shortly. Mm-hmm. I'm holding out for the new version.
Of course.
And I will get one, and you can do VR things. So you can do VR, like a trip to Machu Picchu, mm-hmm. or, you know, VR to a volcano. And in fact, one of the things Google announced, and I forget what they call it, is this package. 16 cardboard sets plus phones plus a tablet that controls them all for a classroom.
Whoa.
Hello. So you can now, a teacher can now say, today we're going to go look at
a volcano.
Live or we're going to, yeah, whatever. We're going to go tour the Galapagos Islands.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever it is they want to do. And the kids pick up the little things and they go look at that.
And it's like they're right there.
And it's all controlled by the teacher, so the kid's not off.
Yeah, they can't go. Yeah.
But it's all there and it's all virtual reality. And yeah, you got to have a phone. But who doesn't have a phone nowadays? And the rig, the cheapest rig, which is cardboard, $20. And that's what it's called, Google Cardboard. You should look it up. It's probably google.com/cardboard. Let me do that.
I've also read, I forget whether it was Flickr or Picasa, that a lot of the photo sharing services are taking the geotags of the photos and building VR scenes out of the thousands of people who took pictures at this famous landmark.
Yep.
So now you can go look at them from someone else's pictures too.
Yep. Yeah, it's google.com/get/cardboard. And it's really simple. It's a little viewer. And I'd wait till they announce the 2.0. And then at the bottom is Jump, which is that 16-camera rig that I was talking about. That's from GoPro. So, and it's 16 cameras, probably $10,000 for the whole rig. Yeah. But,
and it's a standard tripod mount. So you can put it on your existing tripod.
You can put it on your existing tripod, or you can, you know, they mount it onto shoulder rigs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little higher than your head, so you put it on somebody short, so the average human can get it. And that's probably google.com/jump, probably.
Yep. And it's Google Photosphere that does the public photos that build virtual panoramas out of popular tourist sites, because so many people have taken so many pictures at slightly different angles, which is how you make a panorama.
Right, exactly.
And you make a spherical panorama, and you've got a VR.
Yep, and so they're doing that. And then you can look at those, of course, with Google Cardboard.
Yep.
So for like $20, like I said, I'm waiting for version 2. They announced it, but the new Cardboard, there you go. It sports larger phones, a new button that works with any phone, three-step assembly, disassembly. The first one was a little bit origami-ish. But they're pretty inexpensive. You can get them from a dozen different companies. Or if you prefer, of course, you can download the plan and print it out on paper and copy it to Cardboard and build your own. Yeah.
One thing we should probably mention is, folks,
not that anyone will hear it.
Well, for the folks that are hearing on the web and on the stream, if you're having trouble, you know, staying connected on the stream and that, we suggest that you go to the Soundbites website and go through there.
And you can try the Ustream video stream
as
well.
The Ustream, yeah. Try those, because we do have a limit of 99, and we are maxing it out. Yep. So it is crashing, so you folks might be getting frustrated. We suggest that you do go to the Ustream, because that can handle a little bit more and maybe evenly distribute between listening on the Jazz website and, you know, our streams. You know, we can equal this out, and everybody can still listen.
How many people are listening on the Ustream?
We got 12 now.
Yeah. So plenty of space on the Ustream. You can get to it fairly easily if you go to soundbites.org. You will see the very first post right there, right now at least, tells you that the transmitter is down, but we're up. And if you open that up, you'll see links both to the audio stream, which we suggest you do not click on.
Correct.
And the Ustream, which we suggest you do click on. Mm-hmm. Guess who makes a Cardboard thing? Actually, of course, they make it out of plastic.
Hmm.
ViewMaster.
Nice.
Oh!
It looks just like a ViewMaster. It's amazing.
Neat.
It's amazing. Holy moly. Okay, this may cause me to part with my hard-earned shekels.
Seems it's only $30.
And it's only $30. I don't see what phones it works with. I'll check this out later. This is kind of amazing. It looks like a ViewMaster. Cool. That's funny.
And you can buy experience reels for $15 until you make your own VRs.
Right. Yeah, this is pretty amazing. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we will be with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. We have Sal from Fairport on the line. and we'll be bringing you a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Yep, it's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And our first caller is Sal from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Sal. What's up?
Hey, guys. Hey, you know what? Your stream is working fine. I'm listening to
the stream. The stream is working until it crashes.
When too many people listen, yeah.
It's been okay.
Yeah, we only, sadly, remember, we are member-supported, and you guys are only supporting us to the tune of 100 streams. Well, that's simply true. And so we can't have more than that. So when it hits 100, it actually kind of crashes, and everybody has to log on again. But the Ustream should be able to hold more.
Ah, okay. Hey, I haven't had a chance to listen earlier. Anybody talking about the Apple Watch this week?
We haven't gotten to it yet, but the Apple Watch with the Apple Watch. No, go ahead.
Did you get yours?
Yeah, I did. I did. I like it. I think it's got a lot of potential. It's like the early iPod where things are just starting to kick in, or the early iPhone before you had dedicated apps to it. They're not really good apps on the watch yet. But once it gets into the second version, I think maybe, or when developers have jumped on, I think you'll get a better use out of it.
Yeah. It's like any first generation product. No one quite knows what to do with it yet.
Exactly. Well, Apple, you know, the iPod didn't really kick in until you started having iTunes involved and being able to rip and transfer and so on. It was kind of cumbersome in the beginning. And the iPhone, same thing. They had web apps, which didn't go anywhere until you had dedicated apps for the phone itself.
Right. I put a news story on Ask Nick about the Apple Watch in the Apple section. There's an editorial. They were talking with one of the developers of the one of the people at Apple, and I'm trying to read it now so that I can figure out who it was. Oh, Jeff Williams.
Okay.
And he says that they're really not selling very well.
See, 30,000 units a day doesn't sound like it's not selling well.
I know, but for Apple, that's not a lot.
That's more than any iPhone or iPad when they first came out with it.
That's less than they were expecting.
Yeah.
That's 30. They are disappointed.
I'd like to challenge any other company to sell 30,000 units of whatever they sell.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just telling you that executives at Apple are unhappy with the sales numbers.
Well, maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not arguing with you. I think that's an amazing. If I made a product and sold a tenth of that, I'd be dancing.
Yeah, that's 10 million units a year.
Yes, I get that, and I'm astounded. I'm astounded by that number.
Yeah,
Apple is disappointed.
I've seen those same articles where I talk about, oh yeah, there's a huge surge, and then now trickled out to nothing. Trickled out to 30,000 units a day is nothing. You know, it's just like wow.
He starts out saying that it's fantastic, and then the guy interviewing him. Williams, of course, is Apple's head of operations, right? He said millennials don't wear watches, and Apple was entering a market where other products aren't doing that well, and the company has sold a lot, but not enough.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
I know what his position is, but still, you know, there's still a lot of other people involved in Apple that probably are happy with the start.
Yeah, but he's the senior vice president and operational chief. So what he says is a lot more important than what a lot of other people say.
And the CEO is happy with
it. And that's sort of the dichotomy, is that people like the sales, but the investors like the growth. They're not selling as much as forecasted.
Right. The problem is not that the watch isn't amazing, and it's not that it doesn't sell well. The problem is that the investors are expecting more. And remember, Apple is a publicly traded company, so its customers are the investors.
And I bet
they don't care about you.
They care
about the investors.
Yeah, and no matter how many they sold, it wouldn't be enough.
It wouldn't be enough. That's true. And they sold, you know, record numbers for weeks and blah, 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 blah. The investors are not happy. And if the investors ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. I hate to say that, but that's simply the way it is. And you know, if they were making watches for you, they'd be thrilled with those numbers. But they're making watches for the investors, and the investors are not happy. Simple enough. Sorry.
Yep. And it's frustrating when you're entering.
Is he still there?
He got dropped.
I think we lost
him. Are you there?
No, he got dropped.
That phone. Now the phones are down.
And now the phones are down.
No.
The system is not healthy right at the moment because of all the... Somebody hit a pole in Greece, and that's what happened. And I'm sorry, Sal. We seem to have dropped you, and I apologize for that. But the product is terrific. They just...
And the funny thing is Apple has never publicly announced what their sales figures are. Right. They've never announced what their forecast is. It's all analysts are saying they're going to sell 20 million in the first year. And then it's analysts are saying, oh, they haven't sold that many yet.
The problem is the perception is the reality. Yeah. So if you're an investor in Apple and you've been hearing 20 million and the reality is 10 million, well, they've only done half as well as they should have done.
Yeah. Even though the 20 million was a guess anyway.
It doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
Once that number is out there and people accept it as reality, you damn well better hit 20 million or else.
Yeah.
Can I say damn well? We decided that since the FCC can't hear us today, we can say anything we want.
Yep. So we'll have to wait until
And we know Rob's not listening, so who cares?
We'll have to wait till the next quarterly results before we see what the sales figures were. And that is a number they probably will announce because Apple typically announces the number of Macs sold, the number of iPhones sold. They don't break down individual product lines, but the product family. So
right.
They'll probably tell how many watches sold.
Right.
I want to know how many of those are the god-awful expensive $17,000 gold watch. And if you're the one person that actually bought it rather than a celebrity who it was given to.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's up?
How you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I'm running RK Hunter on Ubuntu 10.04.
Yeah.
And I got some warnings, and I'm wondering whether to worry about them or not.
It depends on what the warnings are. There are a number of false positives that RK Hunter gives.
I've got a list of them here. I've got a couple of application checks, and I've got four from the files. Can I tell you what they are?
Well, that won't help me. What you need to do is to Google RK Hunter false positives.
Okay.
And that false will positive. Give you, yeah, that will tell you a bunch of stuff. You also need to update RK Hunter regularly you can do a version check or a check all or a update.
I got 1.4.2. I think that's the most recent one, but The update never seems to do anything, so I'm assuming that the version I have is the most recent one, I think.
It not only does the software updates, but it also checks to see what you're actually running.
Yeah.
So, for example, in my case, one of the core programs in Linux updated, and all of a sudden RK Hunter was throwing all kinds of junk at me and saying this is not right. It's wrong. So I had to go in and say.
I always do the Ubuntu updates, and I'm thinking maybe I've got some kind of a thing that cross purposes with RK Hunter now. Maybe that's it.
Right. What RK Hunter does is when you do that prop update, it not only updates itself, but it also goes through your system and recalibrates hash values.
Shall we mention what RK Hunter is?
Yeah, RK Hunter is a rootkit hunter. It searches out rootkits on Linux. And so, for example, when I updated, I updated sudo. That was it. One of the things that updated with sudo, and all of a sudden RK Hunter was saying, something wrong with sudo, you've been hacked. And so I just went in and said, update your hashes. And it came back and said, okay, sudo is fine. But there will be some false positives, and you can see a whole... I can't go through the whole list during the show, but because it's huge, but there is a whole list.
And the most recent version is 1.4.2, but from February of 2014.
Wouldn't they
have to update definitions?
4.2, right?
Or there haven't been any updates?
The engine and the definitions are two different things.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So the engine hasn't had to update, but the definitions and the hashes have to update. So I always get an hidden directory found, .static, .udev, .initramfs. Well, yeah. And there's a thing out on the web on how to get rid of those false positives.
Okay.
It just says, yeah, basically.
I don't have any rootkits, at least. I'm zero on that, but I got a couple right. other things that they probably aren't important, but I'll go look.
Right. They're just.
Do you have time for a Mac question?
A Mac question? No, yeah. We hate Mac. No. Go ahead.
My wife's got an early 2009 MacBook with OS 10.8.5. And I photo's been, you know, running slow, and I just wonder if there's an alternative to that or a way to make it run a little better, maybe clean something up in it.
Well, how much memory do you have, and how many photos are in the library?
I'd have to go look. You know, the memory is, I think it's 2, it's standard, it's just an early 2009 MacBook, there's been no changes to it.
Yeah, 2 has got awful little, you know, 8 is better.
Yeah.
And especially if you start getting a bigger... iPhoto library, if you get into the thousands or tens of thousands of photos. Yeah. Also check how much free disk space there is, because if your iPhoto library gets to be big, and on an older laptop, you may only have a 250 gig hard drive, and if your photo library is most of the hard drive, it may not have enough scratch space.
I think about half of that is still there. I think it's, I got about half free,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not sure about the number of photos on there. Is there a good alternative to iPhoto, or isn't there anything that's...
Well, Google Picasa is sort of an alternative if you want. So there's sort of two halves. There's photo management and there's photo editing.
Mm-hmm.
Pixelmator and Acorn are good photo editors. And they're both...
Pixlr editors is excellent.
Yeah. And there's also GIMP.
And that's web-based.
Although there's a controversy on GIMP. He's putting ads in it.
Yeah, he's putting ads in it.
Which
now.
Is interesting. For commercial software, there's Photoshop Elements, which also comes with Adobe Bridge for management. But a lot of the management programs generally don't have Mac versions because iPhoto comes with the Mac, and so it's almost a waste of programming effort to make a yeah. management program. But the editing programs, there are quite a few of those that you can use as well. And generally, they just look at folders on your hard drive. So most people just create folders on their hard drive to manage their photos that way, where with iPhoto, it actually builds an XML library and manages it all for you.
Uh-huh.
But so I would take a look at the
getting
RAM.
More memory, I guess. But you know, it's getting kind of like this early 2009.
Yeah,
so
you're at that
like,
point where if you're going to upgrade the memory, put in a bigger hard drive, you might want to look at a newer computer.
Yeah, that's always the curse, I'm afraid.
Yep. And if your library is getting big, you can split it, and you know, have old photos in one library and newer photos in another library. That can also help. But then it's more annoying. You have to switch libraries to see all of your photos.
Okay. Well, I'll listen to this later, and I'll see what I can do about it.
Sure.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. My daughter had a 2009 MacBook, and we bought her a MacBook Pro. I took the MacBook, put Linux on it because mm-hmm. I couldn't upgrade too far. I could, you know, and it was slow. It's horribly
yep.
slow. It's faster now, but the hard drive's only 140 gig.
Mm-hmm.
I was shocked.
It's amazing how fast hard drives. Standard hard drive sizes have grown.
Yeah,
I'm not
saying anything bad about
right,
the
yeah,
Apple.
Yeah.
I'm saying that
2009 doesn't sound like that long ago.
Right.
In computer terms, it's a really long time ago.
Right. And MacBooks were considered high end.
Yeah.
So 140 gig hard drive in 2009 was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
All right. Back to Sal. Welcome back, Sal. We got cut off, and I apologize for that. What's up?
No problem. It happens. You know, that's tech shows always have the biggest problem.
Exactly.
What I was saying was, you know, these are the same analysts that talked about some fictitious 12-inch iPad Pro that's never been announced,
right.
And how it's suddenly delayed due to some sort of manufacturing hiccup, which nobody's ever talked about. They analyze like smoke.
Yeah, an unannounced product has been delayed.
Exactly, and they work on that for their numbers as far as, you know, investments and everything else. It's amazing. It's
right, and it's
amazing.
Not Apple saying any of this. It's
no,
outside analysts
not.
And investors who are just going, oh, there's going to be a 12-inch iPad. I better invest. And then when it doesn't show up, they get angry.
Well, iPads don't come out until the fall anyway.
expected numbers and Apple Watch sales.
Right.
You know, there were more pre-orders of Apple Watch than other smartwatches that have sold for the entire year.
Yep, yep.
And this was in 2 days.
Right.
Yes.
So, you know, and I love
news,
analysts.
News doesn't matter, only rumors.
Exactly.
Right. But in the simple reality now is that that investors are unhappy, and Apple has to deal with that. And I don't know how you deal with, you know, well, the watch didn't let me fly, and so I'm unhappy. Well, you're an idiot.
You know how they deal with it? They let time pass, and then they get caught up with manufacturing because they're probably at a point where they can't keep up with the total number of orders because there's still delays. You order something and you're waiting a couple weeks to get it.
Right.
That shows you they're just not able to keep up with the numbers.
That's only because you're a reasonable human being, Sal. You're not an investor.
I am an investor. It's just that I'm more reasonable than these guys that want to make, $2 million overnight.
Well, you're clearly in the minority here, Sal.
Yeah, always.
You have to get less reasonable.
But see, if you watch and you get involved in Apple, I've been following Apple. I switched over to Apple since 2000, and you realize, their stuff is long term, and they don't care what everybody else thinks. They're doing what they're going to do because, in the long term, they win.
Yeah, there's no question of that. But in the short term, if you were a big noise at Apple, you have a legitimate concern that investors are unhappy.
In the short term.
But that's all that counts anymore.
Yeah.
If enough people are unhappy, they start selling off Apple, a panic happens, there's a problem.
And Apple can buy it out, and then they sell it back. They've got enough cash to buy.
If they keep doing that, people are going to lose faith in Apple altogether. If Apple has to keep bailing itself out, that's an issue. All right, listen, we got to take a break.
Okay.
Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Nick, you. 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites member supported, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And let me announce, while there are actually people listening, it would probably be better if you go to the Ustream, which you can get to from our website at soundbites.org. You can see the top post at the moment is showing how to get to the Ustream. So if you do that, that'll be good. A lot of the Apple stuff and most of the Google announcements, there's a link in Soundbites. I also have an entire section of Ask Nick about Google and about Apple. Two separate sections, so you can read a lot of that stuff.
I haven't wanted to post anything and push your message down.
No, I get that, but you might have to. When we
I was
get
looking
to
for a way to
going.
Pin it to the top and didn't see that either.
Right. There should be a way. I should be able to do it. Hold on a minute. I'll get to it in a minute. Or you should be able to edit it because you're an editor. I don't know. Anyway, just so all you Apple whiners don't feel left out, Apple's WWDC conference, what would somebody do? I don't know. Worldwide Developers Conference is all set to take place June 8th to 12th, which is pretty much when the Jazz Festival is happening. This is where the company showcases the next level of iOS and OS 10. Given the interest in the conference, rumors have already started, and we talked to Sal about rumors, about what Apple will reveal in iOS 9, the next OS from the company for its iPhones and iPads. Note that these are rumors only. Anybody who invests based on these rumors is an idiot. Apple will be ditching Helvetica New, which was introduced in iOS 7 in favor of Apple Watch Font San Francisco, which I used to use on the old Mac. The original Mac had a San Francisco font.
No, that was the ransom note font. All the characters were different sizes and different shapes and different baselines. That was San Francisco.
Okay.
That was the ransom note font.
Yeah, I thought it was, but I didn't remember. Apple bought Beats music streaming service in the headphones business for $3 billion in 2014. It's likely we'll see something that finally comes out of that. Transit for Apple Maps will allow users to navigate subways, bus services, train routes using the Apple Maps app. Apple is very upset that people have been going to Google for that, so they're bringing it into their own app. Theoretically, they'll be doing that soon. Again, these are rumors. Last year, we saw Siri get integration with Shazam, which allowed Apple's voice assistant to identify songs for users because reading the screen is so 1990. In addition to this, Apple introduced the Hey Siri mode, which allows users to start a question with that phrase. It remains to be seen because OK Google was so much more fun, and now Hey Siri is fun too.
And you've just set off millions of phones.
Well, I have.
You've set off about 100 phones because that's
OK Google, yeah.
OK Google.
And Hey Siri. Xbox, off.
Yeah. Oh, that's low. That's the cool. That's cruel.
That'd be cool.
If we're gonna get, if we get calls, it, that was Steve Ray. Not that anybody it happened to is listening. It remains to be seen how Siri evolves in OS 9.
How pathetic is this?
Yes, there could be a good chance that Siri will look a lot like the colorful version in the Apple Watch. Whether Siri finally makes an appearance in OS 10 is another question a lot of Apple users will be asking. Apple's answer to IoT, the Internet of Things, gadgets and devices for the home, HomeKit, was showcased last year at WWDC 2015-14. This year, we could see the app renamed to Home, and it will come with new features like virtual rooms, which help users organize their smart accessories around their home. With the release of a new version of iOS, the biggest problem is that users who are on older devices find their iPhones and iPads start getting buggy and slow once they move into the new version. And please remember, these are all rumors. Do not invest based on what you hear here today. So are you hot for the new version of iOS? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-780-0415. Yeah, it's there's a lot of rumors. People can't wait another, like, 2 weeks.
Buy on rumor and sell on news.
Exactly.
The rumors are always better. Let's start some cool rumors.
Yeah. I can't think of any that wouldn't sound utterly insane, except that people will believe them anyway.
Yep.
Apple and Google are merging and are going to call themselves Goople.
CrazyAppleRumors.com.
Or Aggle, I suppose, would be the other choice.
That's like FedEx and UPS.
Fed up.
Fed up.
Yeah, it's I don't know what to tell you. It's rumors are just rumors, and anybody can start one. And the problem with the internet is that all of them are equally believable. I've stopped looking at pictures. You know, when somebody says, you won't believe what this picture shows, my response to that is always, probably not, so I won't bother to look. Because they're always, you know, who doesn't believe, you know, and when they're real, who doesn't believe that stuff? How gullible do you have to be to not believe that?
Yeah. Or and the ones I always hate, you know, amazing thing happens next. That wasn't that amazing.
Yeah, it wasn't.
You'll never
amazing.
Believe this.
You're incredibly gullible.
Yeah, that's pretty stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I got caught by one the other day. I was watching Price is Right, you know, last Monday because I was home.
You were home and it's Price is Right.
Price is Right, yeah. And I saw this video on YouTube. The most amazing Plinko game ever. No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
He got a single. I'm figuring he's going to get the $50,000. The five straight down. No, he zero, zero, zero. Okay, all right. 5 zeros in a row. 10,000, 1,500. Just an ordinary Plinko game. Why was that the most? But the guy got a view. And he got one more view by naming it the most amazing Plinko game ever.
Right, exactly.
What was really cool is all the people in the showcase had relatives that had won showcases 20 years ago.
Oh, interesting.
So Price is Right has been on so long, we're getting generational contestants. One woman said her mother was a double showcase winner in the 70s.
Wow, very cool. Have we got time for a person or are we not personing? All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Ed?
Hey, gang. Great show again.
Thank you.
Yep, I just wanted to comment. Last night on the Wham News, their lead story was about the iPhone and a problem they're having with a message that comes through with some kind of Japanese.
Yeah, no, it's Arabic.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, shuts down the phone.
Well, at a minimum, yeah, it shuts down the messaging app.
It has to do with a message banner.
Yeah, what happens is this. The message has a number of weird characters in it and then some Arabic. When an iPhone message shows up on your front page, right, or on the preview section, it tries to shorten it. The problem is, in Arabic, when you try to shorten some of the words that were used in this message, it actually makes the word longer. So Apple tries to shorten it, it ends up longer. Tries to shorten it, ends up longer. Tries to shorten it, ends up longer. Yeah. And goes, well, the heck with this, and shuts down.
Yeah. And the way to do that is what, to shut off the banner?
Well, there's a couple of workarounds. So, of course, as soon as the news hit this was happening, everyone started sending that message to their friends to screw up their phone. There's a couple of fixes for it. One is to ask Siri to read unread messages, and then you can delete that unread message. The other way is to have someone or even yourself send you another message. So when you're viewing that message, you can delete the first one.
Okay, well, I just was wondering if you were going to comment on that today.
Yeah, we talked a tiny bit about it earlier, but this is a good recap on that. So it's actually the problem was found at Apple,
which is interesting.
Usually,
third party people find these weird little problems.
Yep.
Question is, can they fix it?
Well, right, and that's the other issue, isn't it? Yeah.
Right. Well, hey, gang, thanks a lot.
Yep. It's technically a Unicode parsing error, trying to parse. Arabic is a double byte language, isn't it? So it's Unicode is a double byte language. So it takes 2 bytes to make a character, where in normal, you know, Roman letters is only 1 byte.
Right.
So it's trying to parse that double byte and things end up weird.
Compound that with the fact that in Arabic, when you shorten some words, the resulting word, you actually end up with another word that takes more characters. And somebody went and found all of those, or at least a half a dozen of those, and put them in the message. Found enough of those to crash the machine.
Right.
So that's what that all came down to. And because of that is where you have the issue of the phone crashing.
Yeah, at a minimum, the Messages app itself will crash, but the rest of the phone will be okay. But there are cases where the entire phone crashes.
And by crash, we really mean it shuts down.
It reboots. It's a computer.
And so it reboots, right, exactly. Yeah. It's not like the screen shatters and it becomes dust in your hands. It restarts. So if you either turn off messaging or delete those messages, you're fine again. It's not actually taking over your machine. It's not putting a virus in your machine. It's not really doing anything to your machine, actually.
But generally, that's how those vulnerabilities are found. If you can make a program crash, you can figure out how to make it do something else, too.
Right.
So we expect an update to the Messages app very soon.
And also to clarify, if you were to view that particular message on a web page, or if somebody sent it to you as a text file or whatever, that does not matter. It will still show up without any trouble at all, because it's only when the messaging app tries to shorten it that you have the problem. So if you actually were not viewing previews and you open the app, the message itself, that wouldn't crash your phone.
Right. But I'm not sure how to shut down previews.
I don't know that you can. I'm just saying that if you could, that's the way that would happen. But if you, as Steve said, Siri can read the messages and you can delete that message through that. It generally starts out with the words effective and then power and then a bunch of nonsense and then some Arabic and some more nonsense. And it's that combination of length plus the Arabic that causes that bigger, smaller problem that eventually shuts down either the messaging app or the phone. It's not the end of civilization as we know it. It's just an annoying nuisance. Any of your friends who sent you that particular message should probably be defriended immediately or blocked from sending you any more text messages.
Hey, look what happens. No, that's what your friend...
Yeah.
Hey, look at this. Okay, I wonder... Well, okay, let's send it to an Android user. See if Android parses it the same way.
It won't.
That's just a picture.
Yeah. You can find it all over the web and send it to people. That's easy enough. I was going to send it to myself last night, and then I got sidetracked by, life. Life happened. Yeah.
It's funny,
but believe me,
happens.
I'm sure a million people have already sent it to an Android user, and Well, nothing happened.
Yeah, really.
Because Android handles it differently, that's all. Mm-hmm. Not better, worse, no. Just differently. And it's an interesting issue, and it's a problem that Apple will solve soon, I'm sure. No, it's the whole thing, effective power, all of that. Yeah. Yeah.
I like how they redacted send that to someone with an iPhone.
Yeah.
And they can still see it says send that to someone, but they crossed the line.
Yeah.
Don't send this
like
to someone.
Like that ever worked. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's only more reason to send it.
Right, exactly.
Because they're telling you not to.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, it's encourage them.
Right. It isn't the end of civilization as we know it.
No.
It isn't killing your phone. Your phone will not turn to dust. You will not be forced to become an Android user. All that happens is your phone, either your messaging app shuts down or the phone reboots. And there are ways to get rid of that message and it's gone forever. Block all the people who send it to you because they're obviously idiots and move on with your life. It's that simple. Shouldn't be a problem thereafter.
Until the next bug is found.
Until the next bug is found, and there are bugs in every operating system.
Well, and we mentioned that during the break, but Android M, they haven't announced what the M means yet. I wonder if that means that they're in negotiations with Mars.
Could be Mars bars, could be marzipan, could be marshmallows.
KitKat went over so well.
Yeah, exactly. Or they might just give up on the
M.
stuff and just call it M. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You've wasted an entire hour of your life listening to the audio stream crash. And you can do it again after the break. Or, of course, you can join us on the Ustream, which is a whole lot more solid. And we'll be back with Dave. I redid that part. We'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour on the penultimate day of May, we're going to be bringing you a whole lot more sound bites. And we're going to start by going right back to the phones, and it apparently is Sal in Fairport Day here on Sound Bites. What's up, Sal?
Okay, it doesn't bode well for number of callers, but anyway, I just wanted to agree with you, Nick, as far as blocking the people that send you that silly text in Arabic to shut down your iPhone.
Yep.
And the other thing is, in settings, you can go to in settings in the iPhone, and you go to messages, and then you can select the number of preview lines shown, and you can have it at zero.
Oh, there you go. And so if you set that to zero.
Yeah, nothing shown, so you don't have the preview, and it doesn't try to do that, and it doesn't shut itself down.
Right. And you can turn off, in as long as you're not seeing it on the home screen. On the lock screen.
You should be okay.
Yeah, you should be okay. Thanks.
Yeah no problem.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Bye.
That must only be on the phone because I don't see it on my iPod.
Okay.
Interesting.
Does he have a newer...
No, I'm running the latest OS.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, so we were... for those of you just tuned in, who are somewhere in the middle of the stream being up and the stream being down.
Yeah, up and down.
Hopefully we've got more people on the...
up to 18 on the Ustream.
We're up to 18 in the Ustream, so people are finding it there. As you can see from the first message on the Soundbites website, the transmitter is down, and all you have to hear us today is the live audio stream and the Ustream. The live audio stream, sadly, has only 100 users on it because we are member-supported, and that's all you've been willing to pay for so far. So we've been crashing that pretty regularly as time goes on.
We do a very good job of it.
We're actually excellent at that. And so you'd be better off being on the Ustream. And there's a link to the Ustream there as well. If you have a computer, you can get on the Ustream to see us there. And we've been getting calls about that as well. We really have, we've answered this question probably a dozen times already over the phone and without even putting those people on the air. So we're being a little terse with people, I admit that, and that is just the way it is. I hope you told them to go to the Ustream and not to the audio stream.
I just told them to go to the webpage.
Good.
That's shorter and easier than trying to explain everything.
Yep.
To folks, because
I should explain right on the very, it's the very first message on the stream. So we've talked about Android, we've talked about Apple phone problems. Now here's one for Android users, even in your wildest dreams. Did you ever think that someone to whom you sold your old phone after processing the highly suggested factory reset would be accessing a lot of the information you hid behind layers of passwords when the phone was yours? As disconcerting as it might sound, this is in fact the case. Computer scientists at Cambridge University attempted to assess the effectiveness of the factory reset feature. They tested 21 devices bought from eBay from 5 different manufacturers running a range of Android versions from 2.3.x up to 4.3, which included gingerbread, honeycomb, ice cream sandwich, and jelly bean. The scientists, by applying the results they found, were able to conclude that over 500 million phones, and that's a statistical number, so it could be complete horse wash, did not delete all the data from the device's internal disk, and about 630 million devices, ditto, failed to completely wipe removable SD memory cards. It was found that all phones retained at least some fragments of data, including contact information stored in apps like Facebook or WhatsApp, private text messages, images, video, and email details, even after a factory reset had been done. They concluded that data could be recovered even when the users had turned on full disk encryption. What was most upsetting was that in 80% of cases, the user's Google login credentials could be compromised, which meant access to any app associated with the account like online banking or insurance. The culprits were found to be the flash drives, which are extremely difficult to erase. If users are not sure their data are secure, they might stop trading in their old devices, which means they would buy fewer new ones. This ultimately would hamper the growth of the mobile market. So are you worried about your data after you're done with the device? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
One of the ways to fix that is to encrypt your phone when you very first get it, and then the data is stored as a blob of noise.
Except that, according to that, even then,
they're getting input.
Once someone else unlocks the phone, it unlocks that.
It should remove your encryption key.
It should, but apparently it does not. So,
The early OSs weren't encrypted by default,
right? And a lot of that they're saying is not actually the Android OS. It's specific apps that are not erased.
Not storing it right.
So yeah. So, but that again is something to worry about. So
it's interesting. We hear that all the time about different devices. It was a big story a few years ago about used copiers that were purchased, and the hard drives weren't scrubbed. And it made big news here because one came from the Buffalo Police Department.
Right.
And had a list of criminal suspects saved on the hard drive that someone had copied.
Right.
And that made big news.
The same thing is true of many printers nowadays.
Right, yep.
Particularly
ATMs.
Network printers.
Yeah.
ATMs do the same thing. They all have hard drives. They all save data so that if you were to make 100 copies, how do you think that happens? It makes a copy into memory and then reproduces that memory copy. And then it doesn't bother to erase it because in many cases you can go back in and say, oh, my last job, print another 100 copies of that.
Yep.
I don't have to have the paper in front of me. And so that stuff is sitting out there ready for reuse, but that also means that in particular if you sell that copier and don't properly erase it, you've got an issue, a security issue.
That's one of those things nobody ever thought that their copier had a hard drive in it.
Yeah. I have to say, I've always been paranoid about security, but recently, and I've mentioned this before, I redid Ask Nick, and there's a whole section on security now, and I'm putting all these stories in there, and I'm getting worse in my paranoia. the more of these stories that I read.
You weren't paranoid enough.
I clearly was not paranoid. And I've always laughed about that in my classes. I said, if you're a system administrator, you cannot be paranoid enough. Now I know it's true. Yeah, I got to fix that top line. It's not the right sections. But at Ask Nick, there's a whole bunch of sections, one on security, one on Google, one on Apple, one on Microsoft, one on social, one on miscellany, a couple of others. And so you can see all the news, and it actually takes you to the stories on the websites. And the security section is making me a little crazy recently.
Well, the school story has been going on for years. Every time a school gets caught monitoring students on school computers, it's a big fuss. But
that's currently the top story.
The schools keep doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they can remotely turn on the cameras.
Yep.
And a lot of the schools have said that so we can, if it gets stolen, we can track it down.
Right.
It's a little creepy when
it's a little creepy when you've got 40-year-old school administrators spying on 15-year-old girls.
Yeah. On one of the PBS reports we saw, they were demonstrating that fact to the reporter, and they opened the camera app on the computer, and there was a girl brushing her hair, and the school official said, yeah, the kids use the cameras as a mirror, and then so he hit the button to take a picture, and the girl jumped out of the way, and the school official said, yeah, they know to get out of the way when we want to take a picture. What? And you're okay with this?
Yeah. If that had happened in my daughter's school,
yeah,
there would have been a lawsuit so fast you couldn't believe it.
And
so many kids keep these things open in their bedrooms,
right?
And they're changing and whatever. And I don't want some creeper staring at my daughter changing in her room.
And the schools are always saying, and you got to give them a little bit for this, is that they want to cut down on cyberbullying and cyber crimes. So they have to monitor the students' social websites and monitor their posts and make sure they're not doing anything bad.
No, they don't. I did that. Yeah. I'm the dad. That's my job.
When it's out of the school, they shouldn't have that option.
Right. That's my job, and I did it. I don't want to hear about them trying to do it, too. They're not my daughter's parent.
Yeah.
Of course, in so many people don't really think that way. I get that.
Yeah.
I get that.
Unfortunately.
I get that. But that's the way that is. And it's terrible that these things happen.
There's this almost silly headline. Should your Uber driver know exactly where you are? Yes, he should, so he can pick you up.
Well, yes.
Oh.
Yes, that part, yes. But then there's the after they drop you off or, whatever. But
How many apps on your phone are constantly recording your geolocation?
And the phone itself.
And the phone itself has to know where you are so it can ring.
When I turn my phone on or when I'm walking around with it, the first thing it does is the control line actually finds the nearest tower with the strongest signal and connects me to it and then identifies.
It says, hi, here I am.
And identifies itself. It sends the EMEI number and the, IMSI number so that phone is uniquely targeted in that cell. That control line, by the way, is not the same as your data line or your voice line. And so people can grab that information without ever hitting the law that says they can't eavesdrop on you, by the way, because it's not the same line. It's not the same thing. Anyway, the point here is that your phone is constantly telling the phone company exactly where you are.
And it has to.
As long as it's on. And it has to.
So it can ring when someone calls you.
Right. Yeah. And we've said this before. If the government tried to mandate people carrying a device with them all the time that uniquely located every individual within, say, 35 feet, there would be rebellion and murder in the streets.
Oh.
And yet we routinely do it every day voluntarily.
Yep.
And you install a new app, social app. I want to post this picture of my lunch. it knows where you are.
More importantly,
all the modern phones now say, do you want to allow this app to have your location? Right. Everyone always says yes.
Everybody says yes. And more importantly, there are apps that will find your friends nearby.
Yep.
So it's not just an app that you intermittently use, like a phone app that tells people where you are.
Right.
The phone will automatically say, hey, I'm, you know, within 30 feet of this GPS location. Who else among my friends is there?
Yep.
You know, or and there's dating apps to do that, mm-hmm. and all kinds of stuff. So we do it voluntarily every single day.
I have a paranoid friend that only turns his phone on when he wants to make a call.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it very hard to call him.
Yep.
You think?
Yep.
Yeah.
I have a friend who is similarly inclined. He only ever turns on his phone in densely populated public places. Makes his call, then turns it off again and moves in the crowd. So he's not in the same place. And that's, you know, his choice, his decision. But as I was saying, it's just all the I update the news 2-4 times a day, depending on my schedule. And I only pick the stories that I like. It's not a random feed. I pick the stories. But even so, you know, looking through the security, these are the Apple stories and the Google stories and the social and the Microsoft stories. That's, you know, that's fine. But looking through those security stories, either my blood pressure goes or my paranoia sets off or whatever it may happen to be, that particular
moment,
that particular section.
Are they still doing that? I was listening to This Week in Tech the other day, and they were talking about a website vulnerability. I forget what the name of it was. But a man in the middle can downgrade your encryption when you go to a website. Right. So when you go to a secure website like a bank or Amazon or somewhere where you're going to do money, your browser tells the server what encryptions it has. And the server looks at its list and they pick the best one, theoretically.
Right.
But the server has a different list. And so if a man in the middle, he can tell the server, oh, I only support this ancient, you know, RC4 SHA-1,
right.
And that has been broken. RC4 can be broken.
Right.
And so the other server says, okay, I'll use that because that's the only one you say you have. So then the man in the middle can encrypt your data or can
decrypt
your data. And so they were looking at Bank of America and... I mean, right, I can't type and talk at the same time. And Bank of America was using RC4 as the primary encryption.
Oh, excellent. That's a very good thing. That's a very good thing. Test the sound bites, will you?
Yeah, so SSLLabs.com will look at your secure connections. And so you can type in anybody's secure website, and it will see if they are secure. And there's a grade on how bad their security is. So it generally only works for secure websites. So, you know, if you have your soundbite security turned on. So you might want to check your own bank and make sure that they get at least an A to see if there's a problem.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we are off the air. But we are on the web in two different forms, of course. There's the stream, which is up and down because we only have 100 connections. And there's the Ustream, where you can not only see us, hear us, but you can also see us. We are live in the studio through Ustream. How many people are on it now?
15.
Only 15. I know. Nobody wants to see us. That makes sense to me. So Microsoft apps will soon come pre-installed on more Android devices thanks to 20 new partnerships that Microsoft has forged with tablet makers around the world. The group of global and regional partners, which includes LG, Sony, Haier, and Vortman, will pre-install Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, OneDrive, and Skype on devices in the near future. Beyond that, it's mostly unclear when the manufacturers will be launching tablets with Microsoft's apps pre-installed. Sony is slated to start with its Xperia Z4 in the next 90 days, but Microsoft hasn't provided a timetable for the other manufacturers. LG, for its part, will include the apps on a new tablet sometime later this year. Going forward, manufacturers will have the freedom to pick which apps, if any, show up on a given tablet. Tuesday's announcement means Microsoft is now working with 31 device manufacturers to preload applications on Android tablets. Earlier this year, Microsoft announced similar deals with 11 manufacturers, including Dell and Samsung. Microsoft has also made inroads into the Android phone market, with Samsung pre-installing some of its apps on certain models of the Galaxy S6 and S6 Edge. Much like with the Galaxy S6, mobile carriers will have final control over which apps appear on the tablets they sell directly, which further complicates things. The move is the latest in the mobile-first, cloud-first strategy spearheaded by Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella. Over the past year, the company has launched Office applications that expand the reach of its productivity suite beyond Windows devices to Android and iOS. It comes alongside other announcement Tuesday that Microsoft is bringing its Cortana virtual assistant to other mobile platforms to accompany its appearance on the desktop in Windows 10. Microsoft's success in partnering with Android OEMs to distribute its applications is interesting, considering that the company also collects billions of dollars in royalty from licenses, licensing patents that it claims Android infringes. Nick Parker, a corporate vice president in Microsoft's original equipment manufacturer division, called the deals a cornerstone of the company's cross-platform strategy and said they would be a boon for manufacturers. By pre-installing Microsoft software and services solutions on Android tablets, our partners are able to increase the value of those devices by delivering the rich productivity experiences customers want. Does including Microsoft Office on your Android device increase its value to you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
It's probably compromise for enterprise users who are told they have to have Microsoft Office on their device.
Yeah.
And all the Android people will be saying, well, I can use Google Docs and it's compatible.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. You have to have Microsoft Office.
The entire last 2 years I was at RIT, I used Google Docs for everything. Nobody ever noticed.
Yeah.
Nobody ever noticed. And honestly, if you're an Apple user, aren't you going to want to use iCloud? And if you're a Google user, aren't you going to want to use Google Drive? Why would you bust out of your ecosystem for one thing unless it's mandated by your company?
Almost the issue is inertia, that your company uses Microsoft Office, so it's just easiest to, well, and that's why Microsoft got so big. It was easiest to steal it for your home computer.
Yeah, right.
So now, you know, you use Microsoft Office at work, you're used to Microsoft Office, and so buying Microsoft Office for your home machine just makes a little more sense, even though Google Docs is free, Apple's iWork is free, Microsoft Office is not free.
Yeah, right.
But that's the one people know.
Right.
800-pound behemoth. Although the Office 365 subscription is a pretty good deal. $100 a year, you get five computers and five tablets.
Yep.
So that's $5 per user per year.
It's not bad at all. Yeah, it really isn't. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jason, all the way from Altoona, PA. Welcome, Jason. What's up?
Hey, guys. I actually wasn't going to call until you were mentioning about the using Office or whether or not the inclusion of Microsoft products on Android increased their value, and that just kind of caught me and had to call. I'm a hardcore Android user. Every mobile device I have, and there's plenty of them that I have, is Android. But I'm still a Windows 8 user on my desktop, well, mainly because there's no Android desktops. But
well, nonsense. Chrome. Oh, Android desktops. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Well, I thought about it, and I had considered trying to go the Chrome route, but there's just so many apps on Android that, of course, now with the ability to run them within the Chrome browser, that is negated a little bit. But I'm already so vested in the hardware right now that maybe for next time I'll look at it. But right now I just stick with Windows. But quite frankly, I had followed your advice and switched from Office, Microsoft Office, to one of the free versions, initially OpenOffice and then the LibreOffice when the OpenOffice stopped being updated as frequently. But what it basically amounted to was I don't like Google Docs. I just don't like the interface. It works fairly, but I like a lot of the ability to change fonts and do stuff in Word that Docs just, at that time didn't seem that capable of. So I went with OpenOffice, but there is no Office suite on Android that comes close.
There's
everyone in the store, and the only one that came close was actually a port of, I believe, OpenOffice. And I've got my Samsung tablet, my 10-inch, was a $700 Android tablet. It's got dual quad-core processors in it. It's a heavy-duty system, and it could not handle that port. It would crash with glaring frequency. So when Microsoft brought out the Office suite for Android, it was a no-brainer for me. It made it gave me one app across all my systems that I could use. And like you mentioned with the price, it made sense because now my wife can use the same account at one price. I don't have to buy different licenses for my desktop, for my mobile equipment, for my wife's laptop, for her desktop.
And that's a good set of reasons. Absolutely. It absolutely is. Good for you. You know, and I agree. If there are, I've always agreed. If there are legitimate reasons for any app, then you should absolutely go with that app. Nobody else gets to choose for you.
And it's nice that you have the choice now.
Right.
And so I guess in that respect, one more choice is good too.
Yep.
Choice is always good. And you know, if the LibreOffice team ever brings out a fully featured version of the suite for Android, I'll take a look at it. But right now, you know, between OneDrive having all that space online for my documents and everything, and me not having to worry, okay, I'm working on a Word document on my desktop, it's time to go to work, oh, crap. Rather than going to work, I'm going to be stuck at the airport for 3 hours instead of on my flight. Well, I can pull out my Android tablet and continue working on that dock while I wait for the idiot to get the engines started on the aircraft or whatever the delay is.
And I've always said that's the reason to have some sort of online office suite. And again, I don't care whether it's Microsoft Office or iWork or Google Docs, Google Drive. Having that online suite means your documents are always available to you wherever you are anytime you want to get to them. And that's great.
And the advantage there with Microsoft Office, as far as I'm concerned, and those of you in Google may take a different opinion, but being that it is cross-platform, I don't have to worry, will the app that I'm using on this device be able to read the file?
Yep.
I can get Microsoft Word across everything. It works.
Yep, I completely agree. I get that, and it makes absolute sense to me.
Have a good weekend, and thanks for the show, guys.
You too. Thanks. Yeah, we've seen this over and over again, and it's the number one reason to go with online as opposed to local. Mm-hmm. One is you don't have to worry about backing it up.
Yeah.
Although with something like Google Takeout, it's real easy to download them and you're mm-hmm. done. But having the availability everywhere, it works on whatever platform you have. If you have a Linux desktop and an iPad and an Android phone, you can use it across all of those. And I'm not saying just Microsoft Office either. The same thing is true of Google Docs, and the same thing is true of Google Drive, and the same thing is true of iWork, because they have web-based versions. But one of the nice things about what Microsoft Office has done is their actual apps that you can run on your device. So I agree with Jason that that's the sort of thing that makes a lot of sense to me.
And so he's one of the examples of someone who hasn't standardized on their platforms for a desktop, tablet, and phone. And so it's nice to be able to use the same app on each of your devices, even if they're not from the same company.
And I'll be honest, I'm that guy who doesn't use his tablet or phone to write unless it's an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
I have my Chromebook, which was cheaper than any tablet or phone I could buy, and has a full keyboard, so I can pop that open, jump into Google Drive, and write anything I want.
One thing I will admit I do use my tablet for is sometimes if I got to write something, you know, like I say, it won't fully compose, but it's nice to be able to go in there, go into Google Docs, open something up, and put some ideas down,
yep.
or some thoughts.
Yep. Yes. So and
because
I, yes.
I'm thinking of that right at the moment, and I don't want to lose it, and it's convenient because then I can go back in at my desktop, yep. pull that document up, and then oh yes, that's what I, some thoughts that I had that I wanted to put down, and continue on with that.
Yep. I use Google Keep for that, and it's the same idea.
Okay.
So I can pop it open on any of my devices, and add stuff or look at stuff later and leave myself notes. One of the things I really like about it is that it has a it has not only a time reminder, but a location based reminder. So I can leave myself a note here on Google Keep mm-hmm. that says, you know, remember to reboot the server.
Mm-hmm.
And I can set that as a location of home.
Oh, okay.
When I get home, my phone will go off and say, remember to reboot the server. So I don't get it at a time when I'm not at home or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's real nice. But the point here is not that. It's about how you can use these things across multiple devices and do all this fun stuff with the same app on every device. And as both Steve and Jason say, being able to put it on 10 separate devices for the same price every year is not a bad
thing. Which actually interesting is Microsoft waited so long to do this. In fact, they came out with Office for iPad before they had Office for Windows
yeah.
Phone.
That yeah. was Jason that just called, and he wanted to make clear that, you know, he's the travel, you know, the Android net type
right.
of system, whereas his wife is a diehard iOS system.
Right.
Person, so
right, but even so, they've
a
still
mixed,
got all the devices
a mixed
and all
family.
The
family.
Yeah,
but yeah, so you can do that with any of these, but certainly in a very easy way with the Microsoft Office.
Thing. Yeah,
and that's very nice. It gives you the familiarity with something that you've already got, and also
mm-hmm.
The ability to use multiple devices if you set it up right, Jason can manage his wife's data so she doesn't have to worry about backing it up or whatever she
yep.
has to do with it. It really
makes him the hero.
It makes him the hero yep. because he's. I'm making the assumption that he's the geek in the family because he's the one that called us. So
yeah.
that's so I made that assumption there.
Yep.
But,
no, yeah. I think that's a safe one.
Yeah, but that's. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, should we assume that Google and Microsoft and Apple back up their cloud services?
Yeah, no. I know Google does because I know the I've met the people who do that.
Yeah.
But I don't know that of the other two.
So a lot of people often consider, you know, their Google Drive or their iCloud Drive as a backup.
Yeah.
And it can be one of your backups, but as we've talked about in the past, you know, that 3-2-1 backup strategy, you should have three different backups on two different media.
Right.
Because if you delete the file from your machine and then the internet happens to be down, or that service happens to be
exactly
down,
right.
you can't get to it.
And in addition, the nice thing about Google is Google Takeout, where I can go in and say, I want all my documents, or I want all my pictures, or anything that I save in the Google mm-hmm. ecosystem. And I can download it as a zip file to my machine, and therefore back it up again somewhere else and somewhere else. And oh, by the way, if you want to, you can also say, when you download my Google Docs, turn them into Microsoft Office documents. The word processing, the spreadsheet, the presentations, everything. So you can do whatever you want with that. You can back up your bookmarks. You can back up dang near everything, and it works out really nicely. All right, listen, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Even drivers on the roads can't take us down. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Living room devices are constantly getting smaller in physical size, yet increasing in the number of features installed to make them the only piece of technology you'll need in the living room other than your TV. NVIDIA believes this is an ongoing battle for the living room, where companies are trying to provide even more than their competitors in order to make their devices stand out. At Google I.O., NVIDIA released its Shield Android TV device. Shield was first introduced at GDC earlier this year, with a heavy focus on gaming. However, Shield is also an Android TV device and features multiple entertainment apps such as Netflix, Hulu Plus, YouTube, and Sling TV. More apps are on their way soon, including HBO's standalone app, HBO Now. Users can also buy and rent movies through Google's video and music apps. Specs are pretty good. Android OS, Tegra X1 8-core CPU, 256-core Maxwell GPU, 3 gigs of RAM and a micro SD slot, Ethernet, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, HDMI, micro USB, and USB 3.0 round out the spec. Shield also has the ability to play movies and shows in 4K. Apps like Netflix already have a few titles available in 4K resolution. However, Netflix requires a constant 25 megabit per second download speed in order to display the higher resolution. The device's gigabit Ethernet port is a big plus in this regard, so users with more than enough bandwidth shouldn't have any streaming issues. You're welcome, Greenlight users. Thanks to the Android system, Shield has access to titles on Google Play, as well as NVIDIA's own lineup of streaming titles through Grid. The company requires a minimum of 10 megabits for games, streaming at 720p and 60 frames per second, and 30 megabits for 1080p and 60 frames per second. Right now, the service is free until the end of June, after which players will have to pay a premium to access 1080p streaming. With today's announcement at Google I.O., well, actually, this was Thursday, Shield is now available in the U.S. in 16-gigabyte and 500-gigabyte models. I know, right? Priced at $199 and $299, respectively. Customers in Europe won't be able to get their hands on Shield until the holidays. The package already comes with a Shield controller, but you can buy another one for $59. Other add-ons include a stand for the device that's cost $30 and a non-gaming remote for $50. With NVIDIA throwing its hat into the living room arena, it'll be interesting to see how companies use Google's Android system against competitors such as the Apple TV or Amazon's Fire TV. So does that sound interesting to you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Does that mean we're going to see a Google Hydra to compete with Android Shield?
Exactly. But yeah, well, you know, TV is the next battleground. We know that. And right now I own a Nexus player as well as having cable. And I'm starting to keep track of how much time I spend on each one. And to be honest, my Nexus player is winning.
So you can hit most of the major channels and that type of stuff?
I can go to like CBS Access and ABC and like those, right?
Yeah, you have to change your mindset to you're looking at networks, not channels.
Right.
Well,
right.
What about like TNT or Discovery or
Discovery? You can see much of its stuff online. I haven't looked at TNT, but a lot of that stuff you can see online. A lot of them are now part of packages that people like Google are making. So you get a Shield, and you theoretically are going to get some of that stuff anyway. Slingbox has a lot of that stuff in it already.
And that's part of the problem is we're used to cable TV gives us everything.
Yep.
And now Roku gives us some things. Amazon Prime gives us other things. Apple TV gives us other things. Roku gives us other things. There's no one box that gives you everything.
Right.
So you often end up with a couple of boxes, or you...
Apps on a device like the Nexus Player, where I can I can't get a Roku app yet, but I can get I can get Netflix, I can get HBO, I'll be able to get HBO Now. Apple had a 6-month exclusive on HBO Now, but they haven't.
But it's a weird exclusive. It's a set top box exclusive.
Yeah.
Because Charter, one of the cable companies, is now offering HBO Now over the internet, not using a box.
Right.
So, you know, we heard that when Apple and HBO announced this 6-month exclusive deal, and then the next day there was another exclusive deal with somebody else. What?
Mm-hmm.
It's a set-top box exclusive deal.
Right, and it hasn't meant much to them. I mean, it was a nice announcement.
Yeah.
But it didn't really do much.
And you get a free, well, you did at the time get a free month to start with.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I'm now just waiting. I have HBO. I'll get the HBO Now. I've got HBO Go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not entirely certain what HBO Now gives me that HBO Go doesn't.
With HBO Go, you have to have a cable TV subscription to HBO for, what is that, $15 a month?
Right.
With HBO Now, you can have an internet subscription to HBO for $15 a month.
Right.
So So the idea, the hope for a lot of us are that we can cut our cable TV bill, if not some completely, and get just the networks we want over the internet.
Right.
The problem is when you add up Netflix and Hulu and the Sling channels and HBO Now and Showtime Now, be careful or you may be all the way back up to where your cable TV bill was.
Right, there are a lot of free ones like Crackle and you know Hulu has a free version and et cetera, et cetera.
They're free for computers, pay for tablets, which is annoying.
Right, right.
Well, that's why I was thinking about even if you get say like a Chromebook, and you hook it up to your TV to stream the programs. I'm getting to where I find myself. I don't watch a lot of live TV. I always like to go to the on demand.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
because once less commercials. And some of the channels that I really enjoyed, now all of a sudden are playing this other stuff, and it's like, yeah, no.
Yep. Well, and I've said this before.
And I'm still paying for all these other channels,
Yeah, exactly. I'm paying for channels I don't like, and I don't watch much of anything live anymore.
Yes.
I record everything so I can skip through the commercials. That's right. I'm skipping the commercials.
Well, I like, like CW.
Right.
The Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all that other stuff.
Right.
I like TNT and I like the Discovery Channel.
Right. And I record all those shows and watch them later. I watch almost nothing live so I can skip the commercials.
Yeah.
And if I'm flipping through channels and there's something live, I'll record it rather than watch it now because I just don't want to see.
Yeah,
because it's always the same stupid commercials you've already seen 100 times.
Well, and that's just it. If I have to, and that really bothers me on Watch It Now or
on demand.
That's even
worse. It's the same 3 commercials.
Yep.
For every show you watch, you know what? I get it. Viagra. Thanks. Move on. It's annoying. It's just annoying.
Or Fred Tomlinson and his reverse mortgage.
This reverse mortgage thing. Yeah, you know what? I've
seen it so many times.
Mortgage.
I know what it is.
And this is the other thing. Theoretically, Time Warner knows an awful lot about me.
Mm-hmm.
It knows what I like. It knows what I don't like. It knows the commercials that I fast forward through. It knows everything.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it presenting me commercials for things that I will never, ever, 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 ever use? Wouldn't they be able to charge more for those commercials if they were targeted to me?
Somebody paid for a blanket commercial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's annoying. It's annoying.
It's making me think more and more, like I say, cutting that and just go with, I got to do a little more research when I have some time. Sit down and see what I can actually just stream.
There's a website about how much can I save.
Okay. And then there's canistreamit.com that will tell you if your movie or TV show is streamable to begin with and what service it's available on.
But it's the networks, right? Or
it's generally by network or studio, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Right.
I just got to make a list. I sit down and make a list of the ones that I actually
do. So then you have to start remembering what network the show you watch is on.
Right. Like I say, not a lot of them.
There is a website, and I'm trying to find it now, that tells you how much you can save by cutting the cord. Put in what you pay now, say what channels you actually watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that'll tell you. I don't remember what I think. Probably on cordcutters.com, I suspect. There it is. Cool. I think so.
Cord cutting calculator, CIO.com.
Yeah.
Hmm, okay. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, this is
now,
one.
One other thing to keep in mind, though, is if you look at your Time Warner bill, which is $200 a month, that's phone and TV and internet.
Right.
You still need to keep internet. You may not.
You need to keep internet.
Yeah.
Right. You have to have an internet service.
Right.
Yeah. You may not need your phone because a lot of people use cell phones. It's just the TV portion we're talking right. about cutting.
Right. And, so you really want to put in there the amount you're paying for that.
Yeah.
But Steve will put up a link to one of those cord cutting sites in a minute. We're done. We've survived. The lack of actual radio in our radio program. We want to thank everybody who called in. Hopefully we'll be back up on the air by next week. How long can it take them to put a poll back up? I don't know. Apparently it's at least 14 hours. 8 hours. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, and we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week. Thanks so much for those of you who managed to listen.